WTOP Radio News. I'm Tim McGuire. The U.S. carries out more air missions against militant fighters in Iraq. AP National Security Correspondent Sagar Magani has more.
For the first time, American warplanes have started targeting Islamic State fighters in western Iraq, closer to the Syrian border, to prevent them from taking or destroying the Haditha Dam.
The damage that that would cause would be very significant, and it would put a significant additional and big risk into the mix.
Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel says the strikes do not represent an escalation of U.S. military operations. The move comes weeks after militants seized the Mosul Dam, which Iraqi and Kurdish forces retook with help from American airstrikes. Sagar Magani, Washington.
A civilian is dead in an apparent attack on a Ukrainian port city that's in the hands of government troops. There was another attack apparently on government troops holding the airport just outside a key eastern city in the heart of the pro-Russian insurgency. These two incidents appear to threaten the shaky ceasefire agreed on just last Friday. 5-month-long conflict has caused serious damage to Ukraine's already battered economy and killed more than 2,600 civilians. President Obama, in an interview taped for NBC's Meet the Press, says he put off his promise of immigration reform because of the surge of immigrant children entering the U.S. illegally, changing the politics of the issue.
I'm going to act because it's the right thing for the country, but it's going to be more sustainable and more effective if the public understands what the facts are on immigration, what we've done on unaccompanied children, and why it's necessary.
The president's decision to delay any executive action until sometime after the November elections is seen by immigration reform advocate Christina Jimenez and others as another slap in the face of the Latino and immigrant community, says AP Radio News. Hurricane Norbert moving parallel to Mexico's Baja California Peninsula after damaging more than 1,000 homes, forcing some evacuations from fishing villages and resorts. The National Weather Service says the Southern California coast will see heavy surf, perhaps flash flooding from the storm through tomorrow morning. Hurricane Center specialist Eric Blake says the heavy rain is also moving into the mainly desert southwest.
We expect an enhanced risk of heavy rainfall and flash flooding for the next few days in the southwestern United States.
Two women in their 70s are said to be in critical condition after being hit by lightning during a day at the beach at Ipswich, Massachusetts. The storm system knocked out power to about 10,000 customers. Heavy thunderstorms are blamed for power outages to 20,000 homes and businesses in New Jersey. More than 300,000 customers are still without electricity in southeastern Michigan following heavy thunderstorms on Friday night. I'm Tim McGuire, AP Radio News.
Hey, Mom, why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why is an 11 pronounced 1T1?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza round?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
The federal government produces massive amounts of information every day, but most of it's useless beyond the agency that produces it because it's not available in a usable format. That's starting to change. With the passage of the Data Act, the first steps have been taken. But what's next? Join the Data Transparency Coalition and Workiva September 30th for Data Transparency 2014, the preeminent gathering of leaders from Congress, the executive branch, and industry to find out what's next for data transparency and open data. Register today at datatransparency2014.org.
The National Building Museum presents Designing for Disaster, a new exhibition exploring how design, engineering, and construction respond to natural disasters. Discover how we can save lives and build more resilient communities. Featuring the interactive Wall of Wind, where visitors of all ages can test proof performance in hurricane force winds. Open now at the National Building Museum. Find hours and admission information online at nbm.org. That's nbm.org.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Tyson Corner, Virginia offices of Offit Kerman. This is your host, Dana Theus with InPowerCoaching.com, and I'm here with my co-host, Mark Cohen of Optifor Integrated Wealth Management. We have a great lineup of guests for you on our show today, starting out with Mike Heider, Senior Partner, Korn Ferry, Al Ulmer, President, National Capital Flag, Pam Michelle, Executive Director, New Hope Housing, and Mike Steiner, Managing Director of Corvius Military Living. We start with Mike Heider. Mike, what is Korn Ferry?
Well, Korn Ferry is an executive search firm that now is in the leadership and talent consulting business as well, and 77 offices in 40 countries.
How did you get involved with Korn Ferry?
Well, you know, I grew up in a small diversity training boutique consulting firm that eventually grew to a very large talent leadership and development consulting firm.
Which you were leading, I believe.
I was leading, and my partners and I sold our company to Korn Ferry in September of 2013.
Why was diversity so important to you?
Diversity, I guess it's because of the experiences that I've been blessed to have ever since I was a child in Detroit, where I was offered an opportunity to be stretched by individuals who cared about me and believed in me more than I believed in myself. And so being on the receiving end of that, sort of created a need for me to want others to feel the same way by my walk.
So how young were you when you had that experience of being believed in and realizing you could do more than you thought you could?
You want to go there, huh?
I want to go there, all the way back.
Candidly, I was 10 years old when the first time it actually crystallized. The principal at the elementary school had asked if I'd ever considered being a member of the safety patrol back in the days when you were on corners with those safety patrol belts.
Right.
And he specifically wanted me to consider being the safety patrol captain, you know, the leader of the I was 10 years of age at that time, and thrilled, scared to death, but thrilled.
So and you did it anyway.
I did it anyway.
Mm-hmm. What made him think that you had the qualities, the leadership qualities, already at age 10?
I honestly don't know, but I suspect. You know, my family was active on the school grounds there. The principal had shared with my parents that I demonstrated integrity and someone that got along well with the other kids. And there was this something about me where he felt it would be a really good opportunity. So he thought he'd ask. And that's pretty much all I knew.
How many brothers and sisters did you have back then?
I have one brother and three sisters. I'm the oldest of five.
You think that may have made a difference, being the oldest?
I suspect it probably has something to do with it. I mean, I'm sure that was one of a number of factors, because being the oldest, I'm told I behave as an oldest in most situations.
Whatever that means. Being in charge.
Yeah, so I'm told.
So you've been a successful business executive for a lot of your career. Obviously, your parents must have been successful business executives too, right?
No, actually, my parents were... they're both retired now, and I'm happy to say that they're celebrating their 60th anniversary this year, so they're still together. And but my father was an educator. Mm. His career was in education in the Detroit school system. And my mother was a nurse who went back to college and graduated with her undergraduate degree and ended up becoming a social worker after she had five kids, you know.
Wow.
So in her spare time.
There's a pattern.
So they were very... strong working class folk.
I want to ask you about something you talked about in a green room.
Yeah.
Where the principal of your middle school asked you to manage an ice cream store.
Yeah, yeah. It was called the Dairy Royal, which was an ice cream wasn't a sit-in restaurant, but it was similar to a Dairy Queen. It was just the one property that he owned, and he managed it during the summer. And he asked me as I was walking in the hallway of this middle school before summer if I would consider working for him. And you know, extra money was interesting, so I thought I'd ask my parents, and they gave me permission, which is another pattern. And I ended up working for him and for the summer and loved it. But then the following summer, when I went back, and I was the ripe young age of 15, he asked me to manage it, to manage the people and the money for him, which...
And everybody must have been younger than you, older than you?
They were all older than I was. Yeah.
So why did he give you that much responsibility?
He said that I represented consistency and I was... diligent, and he trusted me. I don't know what that said about the others there, but he thought I would just be the right person to oversee the place for him.
So with these characteristics of integrity and diligence and consistency, have you ever done anything in your career that nobody expected you to do?
I suspect that... becoming an entrepreneur wasn't something that people expected.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I expected it either.
Was it? Did it feel risky?
It was risky.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I left a comfortable corporate position to join a small, you know, consulting firm, candidly, that a friend of mine was leading, and I was primarily just making myself available to help his firm out.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't expect to own the company. It was just, you know, I was going through a divorce, and I was looking for something with meaning, and wasn't as fulfilled in the corporate role anymore, and the rest is history.
So how important is it to have work that has meaning?
It's everything. It's something I try to instill with the people that I mentor and coach, mm-hmm. and the executives that I consult. You know, finding one's voice, which I happened to do when I was in college, when I went from medicine to accounting to human resources, where I found my voice, is critical, I think, for one's happiness, my opinion.
So I'm curious about this finding your voice, because we hear that a lot. We mm-hmm. hear it's important to our well-being and our success.
Yeah.
What does that really mean? What did it mean for you in college? How did you know you found your voice?
I was an average student in terms of academics.
Mm-hmm.
I think part of it was because I wanted to be a doctor for the money, but not because I loved biology
or healing people.
So the first two years was primarily existing, and then accounting was suggested. I didn't like the analytical elements of it, and so my grades were a strong C.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, wasn't something to brag about. And then I switched to human resources and loved it. I mean, so there was something where I just connected with the material, and I couldn't get to class fast enough. I loved going to class. I four-pointed every class for that last 15 months and literally changed my overall GPA just based on it. But it was fun as opposed to drudgery and work. And
So what advice do you give to people who find themselves in a career or a job or school when they're really facing that drudgery? What inspiration can you give them to get out?
I would strongly encourage that you take inventory around what your talents are and your passions, and try to find ways for those two things to be executed within your current environment. Or find other environments that make that possible.
And what do you do when everybody around you tells you that's impossible?
Follow your heart anyway.
Do it anyway.
Exactly. As a matter of fact, that's even more reason to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm curious, going back to those experiences you had early on with leadership, all the way from, you know, being the oldest,
right.
And you, those great opportunities you had in school, what lessons did you learn there that you realize you still is part of your success today?
The one key lesson that comes to mind in response to the question is respecting individuals as a part is basically more important in managing others than telling people what to do. I've always been in situations where I've been expected to influence people who were older than I was, It's ironic that I'm at that place now where it's the reverse now. But
you're finally getting to the top of the
point where I'm the oldest. You know, to engage someone on behalf of an organization to operate at a very high level, especially when you're younger than they are, requires respectful relationship building and partnering as opposed to bossing and telling someone what to do. And I found that to be universal and helpful as I've gotten older.
Are you more like your mom or your dad?
I think I'm a blend of both, really. I mean, I have my dad's consistency with my mom's energy, my dad's integrity with my mom's sense of family. So I think I'm a combination of the two.
Well, and you're a family man. You have quite a few children yourself.
We're a blended family of five.
I want to ask you about one of those. You've been through an experience that every parent, including myself, is more scared of than anything else.
Yes.
You've lost a son recently.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that, and what would you advise our listeners who might be in that same position?
Sure. Well, my son Donovan was unfortunately drowned in a drowning. It was a drowning accident a year ago in Michigan, and you know, he was 21 years of age, and I think in the face of that horrible reality, you often don't think you can live through something like that, but you do. The lesson for me that I share this with people who ask is that every day isn't promised, and we tend to invest a lot in what we think is going to happen down the road. And with Donovan's passing, it has reignited a sense of purpose with my surviving children, where I spent a lot more time with them creating memories and experiences together versus assuming I'll get around to it eventually. And I would strongly encourage the readers to feel the same way about their families.
Don't put off family time.
Not at all. Matter of fact, it's more important than anything else. Yeah.
Thank you. What's the website?
The website?
Cornferry.com.
www.cornferry.com.
This is Dana Theis with my co-host, Mark Cohen. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment, right after this Business Spotlight.
This is Colin Callahan, and this is your Business Spotlight. Can you tell us your name?
Hi, my name is Ed Tolchin.
And what company do you work with?
I work with Offutt Kerman, and we're a law firm located pretty much up and down the East Coast.
And what's special about Offutt Kerman?
Well, Offutt Kerman is really a great place if you are a mid-market type firm that needs hands-on legal services that can get you what you want at a price that you can afford.
So why do you enjoy your work?
I enjoy my work because I find it intellectually challenging. I get calls from very interesting people, very interesting clients all the time with problems that really need some thinking, and I like thinking and strategizing.
What's most fun about that?
What's most fun about it?
About strategizing.
It's always new, always different, and it's unique. A lot of lawyers can look up the law and tell you, well, the statute says X, Y, and Z. Well, what we do here is we look up the law. We tell you the statute says X, Y, and Z, and here's how you deal with that statute. Here's what you do in order to comply with that statute in a way that gets you what you need in your business.
Yeah, that sounds perfect. What is your perfect customer base? Who are you looking for?
Perfect customer is a customer in a mid-market type business, a lot of technology companies. We try to represent people who are entrepreneurs, who have great ideas because, as I said, they give us the most interesting problems to deal with.
And it sounds like anybody who's looking for some strategy help is, we combined with legal is the right. Well, great. And what's the special sauce that's a little different than your competition?
You know what? I think what makes Offutt Kerman unique and different is that we provide Wall Street competence with Main Street accessibility.
Great. And what's your website?
www.offuttkerman.com. That's OFFITKURMAN.
Great. This is Colin Callahan, and this has been your Business Spotlight.
This is Les Molin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Mark Cohn, founder of Cohn & Burnett, a law firm. Mark, welcome. What is Cohn & Burnett?
We are a law firm that focuses on trusts and estates. So we do wills, trusts, powers of attorney, estate planning, and estate administration.
And what's your role in the company?
I'm the founder and the senior partner.
So what does it mean to be a senior partner?
Well, it means that in our case, I'm the thought leader, the visionary, the one who tries to figure out where we're headed. I'm not the managing partner who runs the day-to-day operations.
Okay, and what makes Cohn & Burnett so special?
We are, first of all, focused on taking care of our clients and just on their estate planning and administration. And I think we're one of the first firms in the area to introduce a fixed fee for doing estate planning.
Interesting. And what do they really appreciate about you and the company, your clients, that is?
You know, the clients tell me that they just love the experience. They are very comfortable and confident that their needs are being met here, and they enjoy working with us.
Hmm. And who or what is your perfect client, if you will?
Our perfect client is anybody who cares about what's going to happen to them when they can no longer take care of themselves or their family.
Mm-hmm. And what is it you actually enjoy most about the work?
You know, talking to the clients, that's the part. I could turn over all of the work to other attorneys here, but I hold on to the first part, which is meeting the clients, talking to them, getting to know them, getting to understand what they need and what they're looking for.
That's great. What's the website for Cohn & Burnett?
CohnAndBurnett.com, all spelled out, the A and E in between there.
Thank you, Mark. We've been speaking with Mark Cohn, founder of Cohn & Burnett. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theis, with my co-host, Mark Cohn of Optifor. Next up, we have Al Ulmer, president of National Capital Flag. Al, what is National Capital Flag?
National Capital Flag is a small manufacturing and distribution for a company that does custom applique and embroidered flags, mostly for the government, military, and other businesses. And we also sell the U.S. flags, state flags, and foreign flags, not only to local businesses, but to individuals as well as the government.
Why flags?
Well, it was an accident. I fell into it. I was a firefighter in Fairfax County and needed another part-time job. I was about ready to have a daughter. And a friend of mine had an uncle that owned a flag company and needed someone to come in and be a helper on the truck to install and repair flagpoles. I was in the fire department working on the truck, and so it was a natural fit.
They just said, can you handle tools and heights?
That's about it. Yeah, and I just recently learned not to be afraid of heights, so that worked out pretty well.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up here in Northern Virginia. Mm-hmm. My family's from Philadelphia, and Dad was in the military. He was in the Army. He moved down here to be stationed at the Pentagon, and we moved with him, lived on Fort Myer when they used to have a North Post and a South Post. And then when they were decided to tear South Post down to incorporate it into Arlington National Cemetery, he bought a house here. And then he stayed at the Pentagon with a few tours overseas. Mom kept us in the house, and this is where I grew up.
Brothers and sisters?
I have three sisters, one younger, one twin, and one older.
So you're the middle boy of three sisters.
Middle boy, the only boy, correct.
The only boy of three sisters. What when you were a kid, surrounded by all these sisters and in a military environment, what did you think you were going to do when you grew up?
I didn't have a clue. I at one point in
wait, you're telling me that as a successful business executive, you started off without a clue?
Not a clue. Absolutely not a clue. I was not what you would call a good student. Mm-hmm. So I thought I wanted to be a lawyer at one point and saw how much reading it took. And I'm not a voracious reader. I enjoy reading, but I'm a slow reader. So I decided that wasn't going to work out so well. I ended up enjoying cars. So mm-hmm. I thought, well, this is going to be fun. I had an uncle that was a mechanic. It looked like a lot of fun. So I tried that for a while. One of my jobs was across the street from a firehouse, and I saw what they did, and at least saw what I thought they did. And I went in and talked to some of the guys, and then I went up and took the test for Fairfax County and got hired.
So, but early on, you had an experience that gave you a clue that you liked business.
In high school, one of my favorite classes was a marketing class. They decided to come into a more business environment in the Thomas Jefferson High School that I went to in Fairfax County. So they had a marketing class. There were six of us in there, all men, all boys at that point. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed that. He taught us a lot about business itself, but also about marketing and how commercials were done back then, but not a way not to lie in a commercial. For instance, Bic would send out pens to 1,000 doctors and then follow it up with a call saying, what pen are you using? They look down, and it's Bic, and things like that.
And you found this fascinating.
I found it absolutely fascinating, and I thought it would be fun to own my own business one day, but I had no idea how to get started.
Yeah. Did you need to know how to get started to end up where you are today?
No. Luckily, again, as I say, I fell into that. When I started with National Capital Flag, I was a helper. Mm-hmm. And within a few months, I became a part-time employee. But I started running the outside installation repair unit, and we had different firefighters working on all three shifts to do the work.
But pretty soon they saw a lot of potential in you, and you moved up.
Well, it took a few years. He kept trying to get me to come on full time, and I told him I didn't need a career. I had one, or I didn't need a job. I had a career. And finally, he came to me and said, "Well, you're either going to have to get rid of that part time thing you do, because I was on shift work, right, and teach somebody to do your job, or come here full time." And I looked at my options. I knew I was never going to be chief. It was too political, and I wasn't good at that. Although now that I look back, maybe not. But he asked me what my goals were at National Capital Flag, and I looked at him and said, "Well, your job looks interesting." And he said, "Well, that's possible, but we'll see." And now I have it. Mm-hmm.
So I want to jump back to what you just said. Now that you look back, you think maybe you could have been chief. What's different? How do you see the world differently from where you were at the time working and now where you are as a CEO, looking back on who you were then?
Well, back then, everything was pretty black and white. I mean, I was a firefighter. I was at the low end of the totem pole. So I was told what to do. And I didn't see myself in a leadership role. And I, without a college education, that's back when the fire department was starting to promote mostly college educated people. I thought that it wasn't going to work for me in the fire department to be able to become an officer one day. Now that I look back on it, still college, no college education. I deal with all kinds of people, other CEOs, ambassadors from embassies. I deal with maintenance people in buildings. I put out fires. I have to deal with, I hire my CFO, college educated. My daughter's got a master's degree, and everybody tells me that I'm one of the more articulate, non-college educated people they've met. So I wonder if had times been different, maybe I could have, you know, come up through the ranks. But c'est la vie.
I'm curious, in terms of the going to work for someone who you tell them, "I want your job," and obviously he didn't just take that as a threat, he saw that as an opportunity. What do you think he saw in you that made him want to ultimately give you his job?
Well, I think he saw that I could work on my own. A story I tell, during one of the slow times, we had a shop vac back then that needed a new on-off switch. So there was nothing to do that day. He sent me out to buy a new on-off switch. I did. I came back. I put it in. A few hours went by, and I went upstairs and said, "There's really nothing to do. I've got some other things I can do personally, so I'm just going to leave." He said, "Well, you know, you could put that switch in the shop vac." I looked at him and I said, "Well, I didn't think you told me to go out and buy it to put it on your desk. It's already in the shop back and it works." And he looked at me and said, "What?"
A little initiative.
That kind of surprised me. Initiative. And nobody had ever shown that to him before, I guess. And then after that, it got busy one day, and I had some sales experience through retail. The front was busy. I went out and sold some flags, and phone rang. I answered the phone, took some phone calls, and he looked at me like, like I was green. I mean, you knew how to handle yourself with customers. You knew how to handle on the phone. You could take a message and actually get the number right. So
a little bit goes a long way, doesn't it?
With him, it did. Yes, very much so.
Yeah, that's great. So you have kids.
I have a daughter.
Is it harder being a dad or being the president of a company?
Oh, no, it's definitely harder being a dad, although they are similar. I mean,
Really? How's that?
My employees are almost like family.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I tell people I don't have just I don't worry about just my mortgage. I worry about 14 mortgages.
Mm-hmm.
And you worry about, you know, I've seen some of my people have been with me 25, 30 years now. So I've seen their children grow up and they've seen my child grow up.
Mm-hmm. What did you learn from your three sisters that comes in handy today?
Teasing. I was always the only boy. I was the one odd man out usually. And now I find that it helps me with relating to other people.
Mm.
And the fact that most of my employees are women, I'm used to being around nothing but women.
That's great. What's the website?
NationalCapitalFlag.com.
This is Dana Theus with my co-host, Mark Cohen. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a minute after this business spotlight.
And your name is?
Dana Theus.
And the name of the organization?
EmpowerCoaching.com.
And what does Empower Coaching do?
Well, we support mid-level to senior managers mm-hmm. and leaders mm-hmm. Achieve professional success by developing themselves personally.
Why does this turn you on so much?
Well, I have found in my own experience and my own leadership journey that mm-hmm. the better I was at being a good human being, the better mm-hmm. leader and the better business I ran and mm-hmm. the more successful I was. And I want to help other people do that.
So you're able to help the folks in an organization throughout the organization achieve what they're looking for as well as help the organization move forward.
Well, to move an organization forward, mm-hmm. you've got to master the soft skills of mm-hmm. dealing with people effectively.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to learn to negotiate every relationship successfully mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. both parties.
Mm-hmm.
You have to communicate confidently.
Mm-hmm.
I support people and help them learn to develop those skills themselves to be strong mm-hmm. leaders.
And you have a specialty working with women?
I do work a lot with women. Mm-hmm. They're drawn to this work, but not mm-hmm. exclusively.
Mm-hmm. And to learn more about what you're up to, is there a website address?
InPowerCoaching.com. That's InPowerCoaching.com.
Excellent. This has been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theus, with my co-host, Mark Cohen with Optifor. Next up, we have Pam Michelle, Executive Director of New Hope Housing. Pam, what is New Hope Housing?
New Hope Housing is a housing and social services nonprofit agency in Northern Virginia. We serve approximately 300 people a night trying to end their homelessness. We work with people to prevent their homelessness, people in shelters, and move people into permanent housing with support services.
And you said earlier when we were talking, it's not so much just homelessness, but everybody on the margin that you care about.
Absolutely.
Why do people on the margin of society matter so much to you?
Some of it goes back to my childhood, I think, and just the values I was brought up with. I lived in a community that was very much ethnically, everybody was labeled, and I saw that certain people were in, certain people were out, depending on something that they couldn't control.
Did you grow up in or out?
A little bit of both, because I was in an immigrant community, and my family was Polish, but the majority of folks were Irish and Italian. So we were sort of a little bit of a minority, but more in. But not in, this was New England.
Mm-hmm.
So none of us were in terms of the WASP culture
uh-huh.
that I grew up with.
So you were in the smaller culture, but out of the larger culture.
Correct.
And you grew up where?
Hartford, Connecticut.
Okay. And brothers or sisters?
I am an only child.
An only child.
Lonely only.
The lonely only. How did that feel growing up with this understanding of marginalization?
I think maybe I felt marginalized as I think about it because mm-hmm. I was lonely and only
mm-hmm.
and had to sort of fend for myself a little bit more. But I think a lot of it was that I was because I was the only child and I came out of an immigrant background, I was the focus and the expectation for my parents.
Mm.
And that was a huge way what I remember about my childhood. I had to be perfect.
So you had a lot of pressure.
A lot of pressure
mm-hmm.
to break out of that subculture and be part of the New England mainstream.
Is that what success meant to your parents? Was
yes,
breaking
I think
out?
So. Yeah, I think that was. And success for them also meant a lot about money and security. Uh-huh. Because they had both grown up not with that situation.
Without it, exactly.
Yeah. And nobody in their families had gone to college before my generation.
So when you were young, when did you begin to have a definition of success for yourself?
I go back to my grandmother always. She came to the United States as a 16-year-old by herself. And that was sort of my model of what it meant to be successful, to be that much of a risk taker and to make it.
I just can't imagine.
What year was that? About 1904.
When? 1904, okay.
Mm-hmm. And she told you stories about
this. She would talk stories all the time about this. And she would talk about the other people around in the community that she lived in and their stories. Yeah, mm-hmm. So I heard a lot about that. And I remember turning 16 and thinking, could I have done what she did?
Uh-huh. What was your answer?
No. I mean, I didn't believe I could.
Do you believe you could now?
I think I've learned that people rise to the occasion they're presented with.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would have had trouble making the decision. But once you make the decision, we're human beings are very resourceful and resilient. Mm-hmm. That's what I have definitely learned from homeless people.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
That's right. Well, actually, and that leads me to a question, which is, what do you think most of us don't understand about marginalized populations and homeless people in particular that we really should understand?
I mean, just the fact that they're marginalized means we don't understand, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a stereotype of people who are homeless, mm-hmm. and that is the stereotype of the person on the street with the sleeping on the bench and talking to themselves. That is one piece of the homeless population. But majority of homeless people work. The majority in Fairfax County, where we primarily work, are families, not single adults. And people don't choose to be homeless. They've had a set of life circumstances, and that could happen to many people. And the answer is to help them get housed and stable so mm-hmm. they can deal with all those other things that are going on in their world.
Well, and when you were growing up, we know in addition to your grandmother's influence, there was a lot of things going on
yes.
in the community and in the world that influenced where you decided to go and find your success. Tell us more about that.
Well, I'm a child of the 60s, and my nice, calm 1950s world got blown up, particularly in 1963 with the assassination of President Kennedy. And then there were all the riots and the civil rights movement and Vietnam and all those things that pitted people against each other. And where was justice and all that, and who was the good guy and who was the bad guy? And it was just very unsettling for me. And at some point in there, I decided that I needed to deal with that and do my piece to make that different. I was not an activist. I mean, I didn't protest back then. And so it was all happening around me. And mm-hmm. it had this long-term impact on me, but it didn't have an immediate, I didn't know what to do with it when it was happening. Because it was blowing my world apart.
Right. Well, and actually, that's interesting. Was it the fact that it blew your world apart that made you know you had to be part of it?
I think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
so. What about the perfect expectation?
Oh, what about it? Just a ton of pressure, and the pressure was a lot to do the normal thing. I went to private high school. I went to private college. My mother worked extra. My father worked as an insurance person in Hartford, Connecticut, because that's what you did. And my mom worked in a variety of secretarial jobs and retail jobs to get enough money to give me all the special privileges I got. So there was that pressure of, I had all these privileges. What was I going to do with them? And was I going to be a disappointment? I never really got the impression from my parents that I disappointed them, even though I didn't go the path I think that they expected me to go. But they were always supportive.
So I'm curious. So you're painting a picture of someone who idolized their grandmother, who took great risks, was not expected to take great risks, but was expected to accomplish great things.
I'm not sure I wasn't expected to take great risks, because I think they knew I was, by putting me in private school, that was a definite risk. And I think my parents realized that was a huge risk. It was a huge change.
Yeah, what was risky? What felt risky about it?
They were all rich. And I was very middle class, and people lived in fancy houses. And, it was a very different world for me.
So what do you remember as being the first time you kind of took a risk that you weren't so sure was going to pay off, and what did you learn from that?
I don't remember. I mean, I'm basically a risk taker, so nothing sort of immediately jumps to mind. That's one of my management style, leadership styles, is I believe you ask forgiveness and not permission, and you mm-hmm. try something if you think it's good, because very little that we do in this world is unchangeable. Mm-hmm. You can correct it and move on.
But you came to Washington, and you did not meet with immediate success.
No, I did not, and I ended up back. I came to Washington because I was going to save the world. It was the early 1970s, and I didn't get a job. I was a political science major, and I wanted to work for the federal government, and I didn't get a job and had to go home to Connecticut, which I vowed I'd never do, and work in an insurance company for a couple of years until I was able to move back to Washington.
And why did you decide to move back to Washington and not stay in the insurance company?
Because it wasn't fulfilling. I mean, I was not interested in profit-making things. I did learn a lot that's useful today. I mean, mm-hmm. in terms of the Affordable Care Act and some of the things I learned about insurance underwriting, I understand terms that other people don't understand. But I really wanted to make a difference, and Washington seemed to be a place to be able to make a difference.
And you described earlier that you actually had a turning point in your career when you did come back to Washington.
Yeah, I was very fortunate. I was hired in the Civil Rights Office in the Department of Transportation, and had a mentor who was an African-American man who was my dad's age and had lived a very different life from my dad and me and my mother. He had been lived in Montgomery, Alabama. Rosa Parks was his aunt. He
really?
Was the
wow.
chair of the head of the NAACP in Cleveland, and he had stories to tell in a life that I didn't know. And I was also a minority for the first time in my life in an office. There were 20 staff people, and there were three of us who were white. And I was hired particularly because I was white, because he wanted to diversify a little more. But the fortunate part for me was he sort of took me as his daughter and knew that things I didn't know I needed to know. Mm-hmm. And I went on business trips with him and went to places and had experiences and talked to him about things that I've never, would never have learned.
And you had another turning point when you personally went.
Yes.
On an interesting adventure.
In 1985, our family went to Africa because friends had moved to Swaziland with USAID. And I saw abject poverty and unbelievable hope. And I thought, well, what am I doing with my life that I want to make a difference and I'm not doing it? And there was got to be something I can do back in the States when I come back. So I did. And it happened to be homelessness because I was in Arlington County, and the thought was that there was not enough services for homeless people, so we needed to prove the need, and we did a rotating church shelter program that winter.
And I'm really curious about what you're saying about hopelessness and hope, poverty and hope. So many of us look at people in, quote, poverty kinds of situations and think they must be hopeless. But you discovered hope there, and I wonder if you can tell us something about that gives us hope.
One of the bylines for New Hope Housing is hope and hospitality. And we believe that if you treat people with dignity and respect, and if you provide a safe, caring place, the hospitality, that people can regain hope and can take the tools that we have to offer and change their lives. And we see it every day.
Mm-hmm. So you change the world one person at a time.
Yes, but I do believe the world needs to be changed public policy-wise. So as an executive director of a nonprofit agency, I'm part of many coalitions that work on the public policy questions and use our experience with individual people to explain how the current policies are hurting people and making barriers for them to get it, change their lives.
So change comes from both ends.
Yeah, it comes from both ends, absolutely.
Great. What's the website?
NewHopeHousing.org.
This is Dana Theis with my co-host, Mark Cohen of Optifor. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your business spotlight. Joining us today is Jody Ruth, founder and president of Acumetrics. Welcome, Jody. Jody, what is Acumetrics?
Acumetrics is a firm that works with CEOs that are interested in growing their revenues and bottom lines in a scalable, sustainable way.
And what's your role within the company?
I'm the founder and president.
And what is it about the job that you bring that's so unique to you, that special gift, as we say?
That special gift? I enjoy working with the CEOs to have them achieve goals that they thought were impossible.
And what is it about the organization that makes it so special?
Our clients say that it's the three P's. Our people, our platform, and our processes. Our people are highly qualified, and they're fun to work with.
Mm-hmm.
Our processes are enabling of reliable and timely financial information, and our platform is scalable.
And who is, or what is, perhaps, the perfect client for you?
Businesses of any size that want reliable, timely financial information.
Mm-hmm. And what do you enjoy most about this work?
I enjoy working with the clients and making a difference. We like to help the CEOs understand their financial information so they can make different choices tomorrow to impact future results of the business.
That's great. What's the website for the company?
www.acumetricsllc.com.
Thank you, Jody.
Thanks, Les.
We've been speaking with Jody Ruth, founder and president of Acumetrics. This is Les Mullen, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
Joining us for this Business Spotlight is Wes Burnett, managing partner of Cohen & Burnett PC. Wes, what is Cohen & Burnett PC?
Cohen & Burnett PC is a law firm that specializes in integrating legal, tax, and financial advice to help our clients.
And what do clients appreciate most about Cohen & Burnett?
The integration of the advice so that the client gets the best possible legal, tax, and financial result.
So, who is your perfect client? What do they need?
The perfect client is someone who's intelligent and caring and wants the best possible legal, tax, and financial advice that they can get.
And why do you enjoy your work?
Because I love my clients, and they know that I appreciate them, and I'm trying to do the best by them.
So, how many people work here?
We have a total of 10 people working here for the firm, not counting part-timers.
And why do they like to work for you?
Because they know that they're doing what's best for the client, and they enjoy the satisfaction of doing well by the client.
And what's the company's web address?
www.cohenandburnett.com.
Thank you for listening to this Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theus, with my co-host, Mark Cohen of Optifor. Next up, we have Mike Steiner, Managing Director of Corvius Military Living. Mike, what is Corvius Military Living?
Corvius Military Living is a privately held company that's partnered with the Army and the Air Force to privatize their housing on post.
And what do you know about military living?
Well, I grew up in it when I was young.
What was your dad doing?
My father was a career Navy. Mm-hmm. I started as an enlisted guy and came out as an officer, so 22 years.
And you were a Navy brat?
Commonly called to the Navy brat, yes.
What does that mean for those who might not know what that means?
I guess a Navy brat is someone who is keeping the home fires burning bright for Dad when he's not there and working side by side with the other kids who he grew up with that are also in the Navy.
Mm-hmm. And you move around a lot?
A lot.
Mm-hmm. And you live in military housing?
I have, and until my parents decided that it wasn't up to their standard any longer and they wanted to move off base.
Mm-hmm. What is it like growing up as a kid like that? What is having that kind of experience, moving around a lot, living with different communities of people when you're trying to make friends? What does that do for a person?
Some people think it's tough, and it could be, but I think there's a lot of upside to it. It really promotes individuality and leadership qualities and ability to assimilate with differing groups of people easily. Because if you don't, you don't have a very fun existence. So I think it does promote a lot of fun in my mind.
Good. Brothers and sisters?
Got a younger sister.
Uh-huh. So you were the oldest.
I am.
What did that mean? I mean, you get to be the boss.
Well, I'm not really the boss. Maybe she'll disagree. But I think it meant, you know, my dad was away quite often. He was on submarines and, you know, gone for months on end. I'm back home with Mom and my sister as a tight family unit, keeping, you know, everything going and being the man of the house when my dad deemed me appropriate to be the man of the house.
Did you have to earn that?
I think so.
What did you do to earn it?
Always been a good listener, a hard worker, a person who really has been more mature, I think, than my age.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, with Dad gone a lot.
Sure, definitely.
You probably had to. How's that benefited you as a leader today?
Well, I think it's benefited me, you know, as a leader in a number of ways. One, you really work hard. I try to have fun with everything I do and try to be a good example for those I work with and mentor to others.
You told us about an experience where you kind of really lived into this responsible leader personality early on when you were 10. Got a job you don't think anyone could get today.
Yeah, when we were talking, I remembered a time when I was 10 years old and living in a new construction area, and the developer had homes that needed to be taken care of. The grass was growing. I was 10 years old, and I walked into his office and said, "Hello, I'd like to cut your grass for you." And he actually hired me, which is great.
Yeah, what did that teach you at that time?
Chutzpah, I think, and also it gave you an opportunity to really say, "Wow, you can really help a kid and reach out and help those around you to be, you know, something that maybe they didn't expect." Mm-hmm. And I think that was really fun, and I still remember it today.
What'd you do with the money?
I've always been a big saver. My son's a big saver. Maybe you got it from me. I probably saved my money.
So what did you want to be when you were a kid to grow up to?
Well, you know, when your dad's in the military and your friends are in the, you know, their father's in the military, you aspire to be like dad. So I had aspirations maybe being in the military or serving others.
So did you, in fact, go into the Navy?
I did not. My dad instilled in me the need to go to college. He was the first one to go to college at like 35 and get his degree. And he didn't want me to go in as a listed guy. He said, if you're going to go in the military, go in as an officer. So I didn't go in as an officer because I hurt my knee, and it kind of put me on a different track.
Okay, so what did you do then?
I stayed near construction. I went into new home sales and multifamily construction and management, and that's the world I fell into, and it was a great place to fall.
It's interesting to me that we see this theme of home. We see that you had many homes as a child. Your first job was mowing lawns for new homes. You went into construction, and now you're running a company that offers homes to military families. What does home mean to you now? Is it just a house?
No, a home is so much more. And within our company, we are trying to create quality of life and an experience beyond just living in a great house, which is, you know, a definite. You definitely want to have that. But a home really means a community and quality of life and providing opportunities for people to, you know, be with their fellow residents in a great environment.
I want to go back to your job with multifamily housing.
Sure.
So that's, for people who aren't familiar with the lingo, that's apartment complexes, right?
Yes. My first real job out of college was with a construction company that built multifamily homes, apartments, condos, and single-family homes.
And you stayed with them for a long time.
I did.
At least in that field.
Yeah, I was 18 years with that first company, learning the business, starting in sales and then purchasing and operations and maintenance, and just learning the business of operating a multifamily company.
So 18 years, why did you leave?
Well, it happened to coincide with my 40th birthday, and it was kind of a crossroads. And I said, you know, this has been good, but it's not fulfilling. I really wanted to have the ability to help set my mark in the world, and I heard about this opportunity with Corvius Group, and I joined them.
So you just sort of decided to drop 18 years with one company, your age 40, and start something completely new, untested. Not sure even where you're going with that.
It was a little scary, particularly for my family, because, you know, 18 years with one company is a lot of security there. But it was something that I really felt was the right thing to do. And, you know, I haven't regretted it one day.
What's the big difference between the two?
Well, probably the ownership of the company. John Pisern owns this company, and his vision of having a company that was aligned with the needs of the residents. And it's really like a mission-driven company that's really trying to serve those on the front lines that have been defending the country. And the customer is really important, and how we go about providing what we do is really important.
So the mission aligns with who you are.
Yeah, no doubt. And there's also a big component to what we do. We also have a foundation that we've started, that John has started, and it supports military kids with college educations and other aspects of, you know, giving back to the community.
So we hear from a lot of people what you're saying about the need and the desire to be in a fulfilling job. What advice do you have to the people out there who aren't fulfilled in their work right now?
I think what they really need to think about is what is important to them, and feel confident in your own abilities. And if you really work hard, you can do what you set out to do.
Mm-hmm. If your dad were with us today and we asked him if he was at all surprised with your success, what would he say?
He's a very supportive dad. I'd say that he would not be surprised, but he's really happy with who our customers are and serving the company and the country by doing what we do. So he's very enthusiastic about what I do.
And what would you like to tell him?
I always tell him thanks for your service, and I love you.
Perfect. What's the website?
It's Corbius.com.
This is your host, Dana Theus. I would like to thank our guests today, Mike Heider, Senior Partner, Korn Ferry, Al Ulmer, President, National Capital Flag, Pam Michelle, Executive Director, New Hope Housing, and Mike Steiner, Managing Director of Corvius Military Living. I would like to thank our sponsor, Offutt Kerman, and my co-host, Mark Cohen, with Optifor. And mostly, I would like to thank you, our listening audience, for listening, because otherwise we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
More than 10 million Americans are at risk of losing their vision to devastating retinal diseases like macular degeneration and retinitis pigmentosa. But your footsteps can help find a cure. Join the Foundation Fighting Blindness at the Montgomery County 5K Vision Walk on September 28th at Rockville Town Square. For more information, call 866-782-7330 or visit visionwalk.org. That's 866-782-7330. With your help, a cure is in sight.
Start lacing up your shoes for the 7th annual Susco 8K, Saturday, September 20th, along the rolling Reston streets. The race in memory of Tim Susco also includes a 2K fun walk for all ages and benefits the Brain Aneurysm Foundation and the Washington Regional Transplant Community. Please show your support by running or donating in Tim's name. The race presented by Reston Hospital Center begins at 8:30 at South Lakes High School. Visit Susco8K.com for more information and to register.
In times of joy, in moments of grief, broadcasters come through, even when all else fails. Today, with more ways than ever to experience the moments that transform our lives, Americans still choose broadcast radio and television more than all other media combined. We are the local broadcasters of radio and television, reaching more people, touching more lives. Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
I can't believe it. I lost my house, my wife, my family, and my job. Everything.
If you or someone you know has tried but can't stop gambling, you should know that problem gambling could be an addiction.
While gambling is entertainment for some people, for over 150,000 people in Maryland, it's a devastating medical condition.
Are you at risk? Call the Maryland Center on Problem Gambling Helpline, 1-800-GAMBLER, or go to mdproblemgambling.com. We can help.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. First, she'll crawl. Then take her first baby steps. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school. I'll be watching her run down a soccer field. Staying up all night waiting for her to get home from her first date. Wincing when she steps on the gas pedal and then the brakes. Beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma. Or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Gather your family, friends, and co-workers and join March for Babies to help make her steps possible.
March for Babies!
Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
This paid commercial may not